show. Tonight we have a very interesting guest. His name is Thomas McNaughty. He has a book out called Stop Suburbia from Killing America. And Tom, his family and mine, his family actually before mine, was one of the original founding families of Southern California. And that's pretty interesting just in that itself. Along with the Irvines and a bunch of other people that were here, got this company, area going. My father had worked in the 40s, which is a much later generation. Bob McCulloch, they brought the London Bridge over and put it in Havasu City. And along with Bob Tishman, we had a lot of high-rise buildings go up in Los Angeles in the 40s and 50s. And then the pollution set in. And so that's what we're going to talk about, not only just Los Angeles, but pollution, because Thomas has a few ideas that probably should be heard. It's not read in his book. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Good, good. How are you doing, Dr. Bell?
Oh, really good.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah. So how's the weather up in the Bay Area?
Oh, getting a little bit of that storm.
Yeah, you are getting the storm now.
Yeah. A little bit of that world weirding. Snow in Hawaii and all crazy.
Yeah, at least you're not in Hawaii. All my friends in Hawaii are drowning over there this year.
Yeah. I heard the Pineapple Express is becoming the Pineapple River.
Yeah. Well, most of my friends on here, a dam broke right behind her house. Cut her off from Princeville. She's on the Garden Island, Kauai, and cut her off from Princeville for 2 days. No water, no electricity, no gas, nothing. And got isolated in Hawaii. That's one of the reasons I never moved over there, I think, is because of these kinds of disasters. Those islands are really, not
hyperactive.
Very, yeah, exactly. So tell us a little bit about your book.
Okay, well, my book is How to Stop Suburbia from Killing America. And basically, this is the primer, trying to prepare people for the idea. You know, the idea is that suburbia is creating diseases and contributing to diseases, like obesity, which leads on to type 2 diabetes, which actually is a lot more serious than a lot of people think. So having all these kids, diabetic kids in the country is going to be a real horror story. And
I'd almost think 50% of America is diabetic and doesn't know it.
Yeah, there's a lot of undiagnosed, insulin insensitivity and that kind of thing. Definitely. They just haven't realized their blood sugars are going so high. And
then
like that
leads to depression because of the major mood swings it produces.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, just talk about the depression of the isolation of suburbia.
Yeah.
We sprawled out. Everybody has to get in their car to do their daily commute. And, so it's very difficult to get to know your neighbors.
But
like that guy's book,
from that,
I forgot
you know?
The author, Bowling Alone. Where we've lost our social capital.
Yeah.
Very few people are joining clubs and organizations.
Well, they don't have any time. They drive all day long, and then the weekend comes, they collapse for a day, and maybe Sunday they get a breath of air and prepare for Monday again.
Exactly. And when, we spend, two or three hours a day in our cars. So the idea is that we need more concentrated city center buildings. And the idea is that we need to concentrate the health sciences and the agricultural sciences and the engineering sciences on building a more healthy building that people can live in for a really long time that should be even able to withstand a lot of these hurricanes, floods, earthquakes. And the idea is that you're building in its basic structure with a real industrial capacity and then allow people within their own apartments to put in temporary walls according to their needs. That's one of the ideas. The other idea is that, sprawl and city zoning is kind of way to regulate toxins through regulating activity. But what we should do is we should regulate the toxins. So one of the ideas of the building is it should incorporate dual ventilation systems and dual drainage systems that allow us to separate toxic waste and pharmaceutical waste from our more biodigestible waste like the toilets in the kitchens and the garden supplies, the garden trimmings and things like that.
I think that the environmental side of it is tremendous. And it's too bad in New York, for example, where they've got all the upright buildings, mm-hmm. but they still have the isolation from the manufacturing, which is very little of it in Manhattan, except in the garment district. you know, from the people where they live, and all that pollution from the cars, because they're still driving in from New Jersey every day.
Right.
And it's pathetic back there. And Philadelphia's the same way. I mean, it's horrible, those East Coast cities.
Right, right. And then the whole problem of forced air ventilation. You know, we suck in this air from the streets and put it through our ventilation systems. You know, that's one of the ideas also is what I'm thinking is something that's like a mid-rise apartment building that has, you know, glassed-in interior gardens. That allows you to humidify. It allows you to have a controlled airspace. Well, because what I'm very interested in, my background's in biology and psychology, and I also did a lot of crafts. I did studio glass art for 6 years. So, you know, that introduced me to silicosis and heavy metal poisoning. All that stuff. Also, you know, I'd like to talk to you about pharmacognosy and all that stuff, too, sometimes.
Yeah, go ahead.
But the idea is, what kind of building do I want to have my clinic in if I want to treat people that are, you know, environmentally toxified? I need a clean building. A lot of the hospitals I've worked in, you know, they got molds and they got, you know, badly ventilated, closets and, you know, this kind of thing. We need to incorporate a lot of the green architecture technology to really get control of our airflows.
Yeah, so the feng shui system.
Pardon me?
The feng shui system is needed. And the other thing is, I think the lighting in hospitals is very bad. It's fluorescent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, there is some evidence that the blue lights of fluorescent and street lights have influenced the sleep patterns and the hormonal patterns of children to the point where they're not getting the proper amount of sleep. They're being exposed to blue light for too long, changing their hormones, and it's leading to myopia.
I believe that.
With, like, immigrants coming over here, you know, immigrants who live in the third world or second world where they don't have nice lights on all night.
You know.
Their siblings have fine eyes, and the kids would come here.
Yeah,
have
you go out shopping in all these stores, and you see these clerks are brain dead. Like, if I go to the local food store, working in the light down there, those people are brain dead. They're just running their cash registers and they're zombies. There's no conversation, nothing, no life.
Yeah. What do you mean, darkness?
Have those neon lights, you know, like those fluorescent lights all over the place. They have no air circulation because I've been for years manufactured negative ion systems.
Mm-hmm. That's great stuff. Yeah, actually, electrostatic filtration of air. One of the ideas I want to, you know, what I'm just trying to do is I'm trying to come together with the specification that I'm going to give the architects.
Yeah, well, that's in your book, right?
Yeah, that's the idea. Well, the book is, you know, giving all the people, you know, all the best arguments for why we really need to do this. And then,
We need a book. I wish I'd had your book a few years ago because you go out to a head of Albertsons or someplace like that and you try to talk to them about employee benefits, downtime because of sickness, calculating mistakes. They don't want to hear it.
Mm-mm.
They don't want to hear any of it because they're going to say, how much is it going to cost to put this in a store? And they're going to multiply it times the number of stores.
Mm-mm.
The rest of it goes by the wayside.
Right. Right, right. Well, yeah, that's the other thing is a lot of communities around the world, country are buying into the, you know, the Walmart. Ooh, they can create 500 jobs immediately, you know.
Yeah.
So if you're just creating the modern version of the one-company town. The idea of the city shift is that people have apartments in which they can actually do productive craft, or it can be a retail space. You know, there's a lot of toxins. People, you know, they talked about Katrina. You know, first of all, it storm surged across the wetlands that have been neglected for 75 years, with oil and gas leakage all over them. Herbicides and pesticides that come down to Mississippi, and it didn't just like flood over it; it like storm surged over it. Pushed it up into Lake Pontchartrain.
And that was a sad thing. Yeah.
Yeah, broke down through the levee. And now it's in the households. So in the households, you got mercury switches, lead pipes, lead paint, pesticides, gasoline, you know, paint, solvents, all sorts of stuff that just doesn't get stored properly in people's garages. That's really, you know, pretty toxic. So all that soup is now in the mud of New Orleans.
Yeah.
And the EPA is not really looking.
No, they don't care.
No.
They'd rather spend money in Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah, but we'll wait till those people start coming down with all sorts of, I don't know, weird rashes.
Now they got radiation poisoning all over the place. It's never in the news from those, you know, hard nukes that they use in, against the tanks over there.
Yeah.
You know, spent nuclear, you know, casings there. They spray a spent nuke metal all over the warheads. And when those warheads hit those tanks, it penetrates the tank.
Oh yeah, but it sprays all the radioactive material all over the place.
All over, and it doesn't die in a few minutes.
No. Yeah, so the more shells we explode over there with tank penetrating steel on them, the more radioactive in general the soil will become.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a horrible risk. I mean, you can't grow safe food on radioactive soil.
Well, what people don't realize is that the water tables around the world are connected, and they're all radioactive now. But there's some tables where they're like in Tibet or somewhere up in the mountain.
Right, where they're being recharged by fresh sources.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really think that counties should be rethought in terms of watersheds. You know, water is going to become an international issue.
Yeah, it's going to be worth more than gas soon.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, did you hear the story about the 5,000 gallons of benzene that went down the river from China to Russia?
No, but it sounds like one of my, you know...
Worst nightmares.
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah. So the idea, let me try and give people a vision of what I'm envisioning for the building. Imagine a three-story apartment building with a 50-foot wide gardens intersecting it, surrounded by a 25-foot wide walkway encased in polycarbonate, so that you can control the air. You know, that 25-foot, you know, I'm thinking of, where do you get the diabetics to walk?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm thinking, they should be walking in the garden, right? Okay, we'll make a walk path. People need to exercise, we'll make a walk path. So imagine this. Now you go downstairs, and there's a full retail floor with 50-foot ceilings. Now the idea of these retail-sized spaces is that they have multiple bathrooms, multiple kitchen facilities, and multiple what I call the utility rooms, which is my toxicological containment room, which can be used for, you know, manufacturing, craft, storing toxic material, storing solvents that people need for creating things, you know, such as print shops. I walked into the print shop to pick up my primer. I'm like, man, I don't need the extra dose of benzene. Can you guys put on the vents? Like, this is exactly what I'm talking about.
And they're so brain dead. They
just printed up my book and they're like, huh, what? This? So, so then those reach spaces can expand. Or, as far as I'm concerned, they can live in the top floor, use only the bottom floor for retail.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. I think I know other civilizations have done that in the past, farthest mm-hmm. way back when, but now it's not happening anymore.
Well, and we need to put the apartments together. Now, imagine we've got a couple commercial kitchens in the bottom of these towers, and then we got the garden above, and we have kitchens, and then below that, I think we need a light industrial layer, a light industrial level, where we be melting glass and working in ceramics and working in steel.
Take an elevator to work.
Exactly, take an elevator to work.
And probably
that kind of
the
idea.
Apartments that you're designing are probably nicer than most mm-hmm. people are renting in apartments now.
Mm-hmm. Because they'll be able to be more productive. The idea of the building is we're going to try and gain time, get more time instead of get stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know, look at Donald Trump, what he's getting for apartments now. He's sort of moving in that direction, you know,
mm-hmm.
his high-rise stuff right in downtown Manhattan. But his
right.
apartments with those ideas, condominiums, are going through the roof.
Right.
Whoever jumps on this bandwagon worldwide is going to do really
yeah.
well. You can
yeah.
always have a country house, and you'll have energy enough to enjoy it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But the city apartment's a great idea. I mean, with a compound, you know, around it.
Right.
You know,
well, I think
the gardening ideas you have too, and so probably you have some water moving through there too, right?
Of course, right. We've got to capture water and bring water into the system.
Yeah.
Both for controlling gray water, we've got to filter gray water and be able to use it to. I like the idea of having the building able to support aquaculture. Why shouldn't somebody be able to use their utility room for, you know, massive 3,000-gallon fish tanks?
Yeah, you could even raise trout.
Right, right.
Business
right.
in Europe doing that.
Right. So this is the idea. We want a building built strong. You can do a lot of things in it. And, you know, and still contain the toxins and keep them away from the biological system. I think one of the things that this building is inherently leveraging that a lot of people don't see is the biogas and soil cycle. A lot of people understand the water cycle. A lot of people understand, you know, air pollution. But, you know, pollutants are getting into our soil.
Yeah, explain that a little bit.
All right, so when we take control of the, we're starting to try and take control of the water cycle. Places where we force water back into the water table for, you know, various reasons and stuff like that. But when we start to take control of the soil cycle, which is from our toilets and our kitchens and our garden waste, processing it, you know, gets processed to like 160 degrees, gets turned into a nice gas combination of methane, carbon dioxide, sometimes a little hydrogen sulfide, but that can be filtered out, and got a nice sterile fertilizer. Organic farming. As long as, but you got to keep the toxins out of that system. In order for this building to really be an energy exporter, you've got to leverage that system. And so that's one of the key parts, I believe, that's, you know, built into my system.
But you know, and since the dust bowls of the 30s, and I talk about it in my lectures a lot, we stripped our trace minerals off the soil, which is very important for the function of the parasympathetic nervous system or the psychic or the spiritual part of the body.
Yeah, minerals were missing.
Thought. And so somebody with a microenvironment could start to reintroduce the trace minerals back into the soil. Because even these organic farms don't do that. They're still outside. They're still getting acid rain. People don't realize right now that the most rain that comes down, even in Hawaii or anywhere, is acid or alkaline rain. And you go to beach, in certain times of the year, usually in the later on in the spring, the rain is so, or the mist is so toxic off the ocean now, it's kind of a mixture of fog and water, that it eats holes in paint. You got to wax the heck out of your car, or you will have
this
in it on a brand new car at the end of one season of that stuff.
Where is this again?
Laguna Beach.
Laguna Beach has gotten that bad. Wow.
That bad. Oh, yeah. And I have a high-pressure steam hose. I have some plastic furniture on the patio here, and twice a year I have to take a high-pressure steam hose and steam off the black stuff that grows on it from this horrible acid alkaline rain. You can even wash it off with cleanser and an abrasive sponge. You have to actually high-pressure it with a 2,000-pound-per-square-inch high-pressure steam hose. That's how I clean my outside furniture. I never used to have. I've been in this house for 30 years. I never used to have to do that here. Now imagine what that does to your lungs.
Exactly. Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that it's the, you know, that's the deposit smog on your furniture.
Yeah.
Very sticky stuff.
Yeah.
Very sticky stuff. You know, and negative ion generators are great, but I also, you know, let's get back to the electrostatic. Electrostatic.
Oh, yeah, precipitators are very important.
Oh, yeah, for it, because it gathers volatile organic, you know, chemicals. You know, all those benzenes and terpenes and, you know, phenols that come out of your carpet and adhesives, you know, and, the, you know, okay, I won't give a product plug, but, you know, the filtration system works best. And not only that, we're starting to become more concerned about very tiny particles.
Right, and microbacterial nanoparticles are a big thing in science now.
Oh, really? They're talking about prions that float through the air or something?
Yeah, they are.
Oh,
matter of fact, what I've just seen, I've seen two cases of it now in the last 3 weeks. What appears to be a flu is a toxin in the air that attacks the kidneys and dehydrates the body, and the attack occurs within a 12-hour period and almost puts the person in the hospital. I've seen two cases of it, one up in where Don's area is and one down here today. One of my contractors came down with it.
Wow.
That's heavy stuff. Yeah, it's a nanoviral particle, and the doctors down here and up there, they prescribe antibiotics and they don't work. They just make them sicker. You have to, you know, work your way through it. And it's a killer. And it's just brand new. Realize it. And these local doctors don't understand it because they don't have a global view of disease like I do, because I talk to people all over the world.
Right.
So, I mean, and we need to, not everybody can afford a house, but a lot more people could afford to live in an apartment that would be really nice with landscaping and probably be another thing is theft. You know,
exactly.
You probably have a much lower crime rate, rapes, kids taken off the street. I think that would eliminate an awful lot of that.
Sure, once you have a garden where kids can gather within view, but, you know, not earshot of their parents, they'll hang out more.
Yeah.
You know, and the other idea in terms of art, you know, there's a lot of stuff in Holland I've seen of vertical gardens.
Oh, Holland.
Vertical gardens and, gray water treatment.
Yeah, you see more of that in Holland and Germany. Is really, really, they're doing some amazing environmental work over there. And as a matter of fact, it's pathetic to come back to this country after being in some of those progressive European countries.
Yeah, it is kind of.
I mean, I don't see much in France yet.
Yeah, I actually.
Italy, but the rest of them are doing pretty good, you know?
Yeah. Well, actually, I lived in France for 3 years and in London, too.
Where'd you think of France when you were living there?
Oh, I lived in Toulouse, so I didn't live in Paris, so I didn't have to deal with too much attitude.
Yeah, Toulouse has a bit of attitude, right?
Yeah, it's very much better, much more friendly.
Yeah, it was more friendly.
But no one speaks English, so, you know, talk about language immersion.
Yeah, how's your French?
Oh, quite good, quite good. Je parle couramment.
So you got a little French.
Yeah. So, yeah, actually, I heard your daughter's in England.
Yeah, I have two daughters in the Isle of Wight.
Oh, Isle of Wight. Nice.
Yeah, they're in the southern part there, where the rock concerts are. I always like to go to England and visit the HMS Victory in Portsmouth, and then get on the ferry and go over to the Isle of Wight.
Right. Yeah, not far. Yeah, things are close there. I mean, they've now built the tunnel.
Yeah, got a one over to France. It's really cool. But, you know, even in there, they have pollution problems. I mean, their pollution
is
coming.
Yeah, the pollution is coming. And, you know, where I live now, San Jose, is about ready to become like Los Angeles Valley.
What part of the Bay Area do you live in?
Pardon me?
What part of the Bay Area do you live in now?
I live in San Jose.
Oh, okay. That's right. You were telling me the other day.
Yeah.
That's an area that used to be beautiful. It used to be.
Yeah, it still is beautiful on days.
Yeah.
But it's quickly becoming very filled out with sprawl and losing its tiny little city centers that it had, you know, like the little ones that have been swallowed up, you know, Campbell and Milpitas.
How's the traffic jams up there on those bridges?
Pardon me?
How's the traffic on those bridges at 5 o'clock?
Oh, well, I try to organize my life so I don't drive during rush hour.
Yeah.
Because it's such a waste of time. So.
How's the attitude? Are people still friendly up there? Or are they developing this what I call the Southern California attitude?
It depends on whether the economy is hot or cold. People are very friendly when the economy is cold. As it warms up, people become more aggressive and, I don't know, clawing or something. So anyways, but that's definitely one of the ideas is to liberate people from that daily commute, you know. Would be wonderful. And then the idea, once we start really designing for a properly insulated building and start having some recapture, and now we've got this methane and we've got carbon dioxide.
Right.
So we can separate those two out. And, you know, we've now sequestered a major source. So there's all sorts of, like, carbon credits that can be sold on the open market. So now someone that owns part of this condominium is actually, you know, sort of a partner in energy production.
Right, so you can recirculate the waste into something that saves it from the petroleum outfits from coming in.
Exactly. So, you know, once you put the methane through a gas turbine, you got electricity all over.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea.
Right, so now we've got, you know, electricity for our manufacturing and our restaurants and everything. And it's nearly completely so, and I believe it probably could be self-sufficient. You know, your methane tank gets a little low, throw a concert! Use our toilets!
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. That sounds like a winner.
There you go. So, and then, you know, my background's also in, you know, psychology and stuff, and one of the things I've seen is our loss of just the public square.
Yeah.
The loss of public discourse and trying to create a building that could have room for that is, you know.
I remember one thing we were talking about the other day, how they're doing it down here now. They'll take 160 or 200 acres of beautiful farmland that are just very suburban. They just come in and start throwing houses everywhere. And not only do they try to sell the houses for a lot of money, but when these cars try to go to work, it now creates a bigger traffic jam. There's no
because they only got one exit from the subdivision.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, the idea is also that, you know, if we could, you know, I put a lot of thought into this, you know, if we could designate our city centers and say, let our city centers become more diverse, cleaner, and taller, more concentrated,
right,
more mixed use, then public transit becomes more profitable. Because you're going to go to the city center, and within walking distance, you can do your three errands. Which is a problem you have with sprawl. Once you need to do two or three errands in different places, it's very difficult to use public transit to go do it because it's just too spread out. If you're going to wait, you're going to spend more time waiting for the bus than you are in the store shopping.
Exactly, that's very true.
Yeah. You know, so when you people need to get over this idea that city centers are inherently bad. You know, that the exodus from city centers is difficult to reverse, but I like the idea of creating this building out of things that are basically underfoot. I think my major construction materials are rebar concrete, adobe, and straw or cellulose.
You know, things that are readily available.
Yeah, you know, even in the third world. And once you get the biogas system going with the toilets and the kitchens, you know, and maybe a garden chipper, you've now got gas for the heating and the cooking. So now you've supplied a third world village with clean water, sanitation services, and kitchen services. That, you know, what's killing millions of children around the world is bad water.
In Africa, it's completely off the charts.
Completely off the charts. It's either no water or bad water.
Yep.
They don't turn on the tap and clean water comes out.
Nope.
Even if there is something in the tap, which might be only 4 hours out of the day, if they're lucky. You know, normally it's walk 2 miles to the well and hope you have enough cow dung to heat it.
Yeah.
Right.
And then in India they swim in the Ganges and then they bathe and then they drink it afterwards and they really have some type.
Well, you know, they must be really counting on their spiritual capacity to really evoke those cleansing, clean, electromagnetic waves through their body.
Yeah.
What else can you count on? Yeah. Good thing for those snapping turtles at the bottom of the Ganges.
Yeah. We can also charge water, you know, with different frequencies of resonance.
Did you see what the bleep do we know in the experiments on, I think it was dark light x-rays of water crystalline structure after thoughts were projected on them?
No, go ahead and explain it. I didn't see that.
Okay, so a guy takes, I guess, you know, six bottles of water from the same reservoir. He takes, I think it was called it a dark light x-ray of the crystal structure.
Right.
He takes the first one, just looks like blobs, it's got no structure. And then he writes messages on
right.
the bottles, leaves them for...
On the water bottles, he writes...
On the water bottle, just writing the word, thank you, I love you. I think he then had one blessed by a Buddhist monk, and the thoughts organized the water. They had different crystalline structures after being exposed to this. Yeah, you know, just sitting there with the message written on it. And then he took, you know, whatever, 2 days later, he took another dark light x-ray, and it showed the structure had changed into sort of crystalline structures for some. You know, the one blessed by the Buddhist monk was an incredibly beautiful, looked like a snowflake of,
yeah, very. The blessing, I remember looking at some, one of my books I wrote about blessing water in England, is a Reverend Eardsley in Oxford blessed it, and it had a crystal shape to the molecule, very much like titanium, very neat.
Very neat.
Yeah, and what the thing is, though, is that the body being 99% water, people don't realize that the cellular change by these people putting these hate messages out during the day, and all these horrible honking horns and the stress, that in your test, in your experiment you just mentioned, they would be have some horrible-looking crystalline structures in their water structure.
Right.
You know?
Who knows how that may change the chemistry of their you know, enzymes and hormones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely interested in the idea of you know, devotional religious practices, the idea of a bliss state, are bliss states healthy or maybe even necessary for proper, you know, brain health, just like REM sleep? You know, the idea of emotional neuromodulators as sort of personality programs, because I work as a nurse and I see Alzheimer's patients. The intellect disappears with Alzheimer's, but the personality, the emotional personality, remains, is what I see.
Does it become stronger?
It becomes stronger. I don't know if it becomes stronger, but it definitely, if someone was a generally pleasant person in life, they're generally a pleasant person, though confused. You know, someone was a feisty fighter kind of person in life, they tend to be more aggressive. And more confused.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, that kind of thing. The emotional personality seems to remain. And so this idea of, you're absolutely right. What about the 17,000 simulated murders that the average American child sees before they're 18?
Yeah, that's very true. And then the other thing with your design, putting all of these in similar structures, we used to do a lot of work with pyramid structures, because we found the pyramids resonate the true nature of life through the body. So you could put pyramid ceilings on these buildings up on the top, even somewhat. Some of them probably could be shaped that way.
Mm-hmm.
Tetrahedrons are another interesting shape.
Right.
Hedrons are very, dodecahedrons are pretty interesting. Because I know in the research I did a long time ago at UCLA, we found that a square is the worst shape. If you put a sound, like a harmonious sound out of a stereo, in a square or a rectangle, like most rooms are,
right,
it so distorts it and produces so many standing waves that it's the message or the essence of a beautiful concert is somewhat distorted by the sculpture of the rooms. Now, if you go ahead and listen to some, you know, hard rock, you know, Motorhead, acid rock music, it's already destructing to your body anyway. Now you put that in the shape, you got a death trap.
You got hot spots of aggressive vibrations going on in your building.
Yeah,
I like the idea of building it on the basis of arches.
Yeah, do you have any pictures in your book of some of your ideas?
No, I haven't, because this is basically the book that's the primer.
Yeah.
So these are like, you know, trying to give you evidence about the disease of suburbia and how they're related, and you know, some of the myths of suburbia that are keeping it alive. You know, the idea of the sovereign man, and basically what you're buying into when you buy a suburban house and committing yourself to the commute lifestyle is you're committing yourself to the vagaries of the energy market and the possibility of daily death. You know, do you realize that traffic accidents kill more children every year than all childhood diseases ever used to?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
You know, so, you know, this is the new big killer.
It sounds like a book that should be read even if you're going to go buy a house. You might think twice about it.
Well, definitely, I would like people to go and check out some of my research. My research has been, 20 years, but the last 2 years I've been able to record some of my more interesting finds and, new technology that is going to help in putting this stuff together. And it's at healthyarchitecture.blogspot.com.
Is that your website?
That's the website. That's the Echo Technology, Echo Architecture collection. It's just a blog. But if people are interested in buying the PDF, they should go to rethinkingcities.org. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to raise money by selling the PDF to start Rethinking Cities, the Coalition of Rethinking Cities.
Well, you should post some of your work up on our board on blog and service, because we get millions of hits on that per week. It's blogandservice.com.
Oh, okay.
We've just set it up now where you can post up some of your stuff and people can see it. And then this show will be archived later on, and then they can go back and hear the radio show after seeing some of your postings.
Uh-huh.
We're making a service available here now where people do miss the show. They can see what you've got to say, hear this show, what we're doing now, and then go buy your book, and they'll have a feeling for it long before they buy it.
Yeah. And one of the things I really want to do with the Coalition of Rethinking Cities is create this a channel of communication between farmers, healers, and engineers.
Right.
So that, you know, bring them all together. And so one of the things, go over to rethinkingcities.org, you can join the organization. And what I'm asking everybody to do is identify what are you primarily. You know, so I'm a nurse, but I've also worked 15 years in computers and knowledge management and digital pre-press and gra- depression and all that stuff. So I call myself a healer engineer. I'm also interested in all the civil engineering side of how we can control these toxins so my patients are safe. So this kind of idea where I would primarily call myself a healer, but I'd also call myself an engineer. And to be able to have everybody do that would allow us to have this cross-talk between the engineers and the nurses.
Well, it needs to, and I think architects need this feedback. Have you presented this book to very many architects?
I am hoping to contact David Marr, who is a great architect who's done some awesome work in steel rebar reinforced hay bale arches. But he's the kind of guy that charges $20,000 to structurally engineer a building. So, you know, hey, come on, people. Put your money where your mouth is. Help me.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, people don't realize it, but architecture and the designs that they come forth with actually shapes the destiny of people.
Yeah.
For many, many decades, and even hundreds of years.
Yeah, well, that's the idea, is we want to build a building that will last 100 years.
Yeah.
And have the be able to have the plumbing ripped out and the electrical systems and the communication systems ripped out without having to tear down the whole building. That's a big specification.
Yeah, even remodel a few that are already out there, you know. So you want
a lot of people talking about taking your standard glass-based building and making it more green or more ecological. I've worked in those buildings. It's like Satan incarnate. It's like Satan's person. You know, where the forced air conditioning, it's like sets up in the morning when everybody's supposed to be arriving and it's freezing.
Yeah.
And then you go to the one side where the sun is beaming and it's like 98 degrees.
Yeah, you burn up.
Yeah, right. And well, that's the advantage of the air envelope idea. We just have to capitalize on these ideas. We have to demand it.
Yeah, and even if you don't build an entire huge complex building like that, mm-hmm. but your ideas would be really good even in some present-day buildings as they go up with some, you know, mm-hmm. few changes in the environmental function of those buildings. Because basically, in any kind of a building anymore today, one or two stories, the windows don't open anyway anymore. Right.
Well, actually, speaking of, you know, your standard house, if you have a problem with cold winters and, you know, you want to heat your house with a fireplace, are you familiar with the Russian chimney?
No.
The idea is instead of having the chimney being all vertical, you make the smoke go through a bunch of tile flats that make it go zigzag, slow it down.
That's a great idea.
In the chimney can absorb way more heat. So you have a Russian winter, you know, we have a big fire at night, burn out by midnight, but it keeps the whole house warm all night because those bricks are holding a lot of heat. And that's another real technical challenge, because one of the aspects of the passive solar heating system requires us to analyze, you know, the capacity of different materials to absorb and dissipate heat.
Yeah, I mean, it's just in my hot water heater, you know, after it heats the water, while it's heating the heat from the gas burning goes straight up the pipe to the top, out the hot roof. That could be going somewhere in the house in the wintertime.
Right.
It could be a door, a gate you could switch, and then
you
redirect it down through the walls.
Yeah, I'll give you a glass blower trick. What you can do is you can take your air intake to your blower and run it around that exhaust pipe. You'll preheat the air coming in. But actually, better than those big 60-gallon water heaters
that
heat up 5 or 6 times a day and then cool down, even if no one wants water.
Yeah, they do.
Water.
I have a huge gas filter.
Tons of electricity and gas, whatever you're heating with. But, you know, I much prefer those hot water on demand heaters.
Yeah, those are good.
Those are really good. Now, I heard that, you know, when they first came out, there was a lot of problems with hot water. But, you know, in the building I'm considering, we're not going to have hard water. The water's going to be filtered before, you know, when it comes off the roof.
Yeah.
Or when it comes up the well. You know. So, I'm trying to really, I don't know if you have a full picture of the building or what we can accomplish with it. But, you know, my idea is I'm looking for a building where I can live safely, you know, practice whatever craft site I would like to pursue, and have a clinic space that's, you know, really pleasant and clean. A place where, you know, and also the other thing I see in my nursing career is that there's a lot of people that are in hospital, convalescent homes or long-term care, that are relatively independent. While they need access to medical, they don't really need to be locked in into the hospital system.
I'm probably going to
wrangle some feathers with this, but, you know, they probably need something in between. They don't need full extensive list assists for transfers and all this stuff. And they might be better off, you know. Can we get a halfway house for diabetics?
Yeah, that would be good. So you ought to maybe come up with some systems that could be, in between, intermediate upgrading systems before the whole building is built. You probably sell a lot of your ideas to these architects.
Well, I think maybe one of the ideas is build it in quarter scale, build it in quarter size or something.
Yeah. What's sad about Orange County? See, your idea should have been put to get to work out here a long time ago, because Orange County, California, I don't know if you've probably been down here.
Yeah.
Like where San Jose is, it's a huge area with beautiful trees all torn down, and everything is flat. They got rows and rows of industrial complexes, flat, not two stories, not three stories, but single story, all over the place.
Yep.
Thousands and thousands of acres have been ruined because of these stupid, nobody thought about it, buildings.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Right. And then the whole problem of, you know, with the, I don't know, tens of thousands of commercial property owners, sorting and selling and manipulating and using, I don't know, how many 10,000 million gallons of who knows what. How much of that stuff ended up on the soil and in the water?
Oh, yeah. And then they rip out, I see about every 7 or 8 years, an entire shopping center gets ripped out and another one put in, completely destroyed to the ground, and some other stupid idea comes up. And it's all over the place. And gas stations, of course, with their spillage, they get put in, they get pulled out. It's amazing what goes on down here.
Yeah. That must have been a huge source of gasoline and diesel spillage for New Orleans. I don't think those tanks are made to be flooded like that.
Yeah, pretty much all gas tanks leak.
It just leaks everywhere. And those are definitely issues that concern me as a nurse, you know, environmental toxicology, infectious disease control. And that's one of the reasons why I want in my apartment a utility room, a proper utility room with proper, you know, one-way ventilation, you know, and a toxic drain that I know if I've got something toxic, I'm going to put it down the toxic drain. And the building's going to have some toxic treatment, you know. But nonetheless, once we separate it, it can be so much less. Because the problem now is we have 1 quart of oil mixed in with 50,000 gallons of, you know, poop from the toilet.
Yeah.
And you just can't get the little bit of oil out.
No.
To use the poop safely. So, you know, you got to separate it at the source.
Yeah.
So I am sort of asking people to really be chemically conscious of what the heck they're eating, because, you know, there has been some studies that show that Prozac is passing right through people and ending up in water supplies.
Oh, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, because we were all getting a slight dose of Prozac, possibly.
It'll destroy the central nervous system over a period of time.
Hmm.
So they're not able to bring Prozac and those kinds of tranquilizers, and like serotonin reuptake inhibitors out of the water? You're saying that it stays in the water.
Well, not with the technologies they're currently using.
No, I mean, it stays in the water, not with your technology, but with what's going on, it's in the water.
Yeah, with what's going on, it's in the water. It's coming through.
Where are they finding this, anyway?
It's just that our current technology doesn't destroy things like that.
Yeah.
So if anybody is using reclaimed water, which I don't think
many... Well, Southern California exclusively uses it.
Well, in that case...
Yeah, that's what
Thanks
they
for
use
the
down here. It's recycled. And then down here where I'm at, there's a little bit that's not recycled, and that goes out a couple miles and gets dumped in the ocean.
Right.
But the majority of the water is recycled here.
Mm-hmm.
Most all are inner cities.
Well, when they talk about recycling, they're talking about taking, you know, relatively sanitized toilet water and using it for gray water.
Right? Yeah.
For the most part. You know, so, you know, if you're growing your crops with that gray water, is Prozac ending up in your tomatoes, I guess, is the question. But, you know, it's difficult to answer that question until you have an environment where you can separate things, you know. And so that's the other thing, is that you start to realize, oh, let me tell you, I told you about the myopia with the blue light thing.
Yeah, you did.
And, oh, shoot, lost my train of thought.
I like about any disease that's in dust, you know, has to do with light or pollution that people get.
Well, yeah, the idea is that, oh, yeah, the idea is that architects are starting to call themselves building scientists. They're starting to see that their buildings are influencing behavior. Some of the things are showing that, you know, daylighting increases productivity because it keeps people a little more cheerful. And actually having a beautiful view to look out as a sort of mental break once in a while from your concentration.
Well, actually your buildings increases, have that.
Yeah, actually increases productivity more.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that interesting? That's like, you know, E.O. Wilson's biophilia. You know, we have this natural instinctive desire to see other living things around us.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And then you can look out at some trees and stuff instead of more buildings, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, or, you know, even the fact that, you know, once you have this large garden, you know, I don't see any reason why that shouldn't be, some vegetable garden should actually be in the building, you know.
Yeah, the restaurants could have them. You could grow your gardens organically and sell it to the restaurant downstairs.
Exactly. Or the hallways, what I call the halls, which is the retail level. I want to have 50-foot tall, 50-foot wide archways. You know, so there's going to be these two huge hallways, and then secondary alleys. Now those can totally be a protected outdoor market. There's plenty of room for tables for cafes and restaurants as well as market stalls right down the middle of such a wide sidewalk. Well, not every day, but the idea is also that we need to get away from this idea of managing activities by what space is designated to them. By doing that, for example, in our typical suburban life, we spend 8 hours at our house, and then, you know, 8 hours at our office, and then somewhere in between we, you know, spend it somewhere else.
Well, just think about this. Look at all the casinos in Las Vegas, and look at all the shopping centers. People go, they spend a lot of time there, not enough time at home, because they're not artsy-crafty enough anymore, because they're too burned out by smog. And they are, all the forms of entertainment that they are going through with these malls and in these big clubs in around, like in Las Vegas, are preordained ideas from the promoters. People are not able to be original. They're just being shepherded around in both places like sheep.
Yeah, right, right. So I guess in a certain sense, I do need to find a certain, you know, 2,000 conscious people to actually become residents.
Yeah.
But I think there's a market out there. I think they're out there. I think they exist. I know they exist.
Yeah.
You know, I tell people about this, like, okay, when is it going to get built? Well, I've tried to set myself a time schedule. I want it built in 10 years, which means, you know, I'd like to have it blueprinted in two. You know, I'm not fooling around.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've even seen some ship ideas where, like giant barges.
Well, yeah, exactly. Speaking of those casinos, one of those casinos cost like $800 million to build.
Exactly. Like the MGM Grand.
Yeah, a stadium for a standard large city costs between $100 and $200 million to build.
Right. And
that's
return would be huge on it right away.
Yeah, but if I, on the stadium?
Yeah.
Because it's been licensed to the state through some sort of, you know, pay whether we make money or not scheme.
Yeah.
Now, financed by the taxpayers' dollars on some hope of future profit from better business, blah, blah, blah. Let's not get into that. But think if you could use $100 million to build this building.
And yeah.
Think there's a market enough that the building would actually be worth like a billion.
Oh, yeah. Well, Donald Trump would build it. If you could get him to put one of these things up, he'd pre-sell half of it, and then he'd have his money back before he put the first brick in place.
That's exactly. That's the way we sell real estate, sell it on the model. That's why I'm laying the groundwork, I want to find the people that are really interested, you know, find doctors and nurses and engineers, and, you know, we need sanitation engineers, civil engineers, and craftsmen. You know, it's once the And that's the other thing, is that these apartments, they need to be finished.
Oh, I agree.
So, you know, you've got a whole market for interior designers and sustainable materials use, like cork and bamboo, and all that stuff we can say that's only supposed to last 15 years, because
yeah.
You're going to rip it out, and the main walls are still there.
Yeah.
No harm, no foul.
Yeah, we can.
That kind of idea. So
they had some of my pyramid systems into some of these places.
Yeah, exactly.
You should see some of the stuff I build with lasers and crystals and pyramids. It just completely changed a person's environment. I could imagine a whole building that way, because what happens now is somebody puts one of my systems in their house, one house on one side gets a positive charge off of it, and the house on the other side, people all move out. They don't know why, but they're gone.
I don't know why.
Yeah, it creates a huge turbulence of energy, and somebody's got to take the downside of it, you know? Somebody's got to go through a major detox.
Well, then we'll have to protect the whole building with the, one large pyramid.
Yeah, that would be really nice.
Now, you've been to Europe.
Yeah,
you've walked in these, in these large sidewalks with colonnades.
Yeah.
You know how protected you feel when you're walking on a in a colonnade, even though there's four lanes of traffic next to me?
Yeah, that's much better.
That's the other thing. The building needs to not turn its back on the sidewalk like so many of these Walmarts and other things do. They turn their back on the sidewalk, and they turn their front to the parking lot.
Exactly. Sure. That's what about everybody does.
So the person walking down the street on the sidewalk, you know, is completely shut out. But, you know, when the building embraces the sidewalk, gives it a nice, you know, 25 or 50-foot sidewalk where people mingle, stop, shop, drink coffee, have dinner.
The sidewalks in Orange County are so bad in most towns, including Laguna, that if what, like down here, and we make jokes out of it in Laguna, where if a tourist stops and looks in a shop, you can't get by. You
got
to go out on the street to get around them, because there's no human
no sidewalk
factor, you know, thought into people on the sidewalks here in this town. You got to go in the street.
And you know, they see that as a cost. Oh, we have to upkeep this access sidewalk.
Yeah.
You know, but that, you know, by making those sidewalks simply access, they're taking away all possibility for social interaction and literally, you know, tearing apart the social fabric by destroying the public square. You know, I lived in Toulouse where I walked to work and I walked to the train to go to work. And, you just know people, even acquaintances. And there's a psychological calming benefit to being known in your neighborhood and having acquaintances, and it's, and, you know, it's what Jane Jacobs calls about the, you know, semi-public, semi-private space.
Yeah,
socially.
No, I agree. It must be. It's beautiful in France, I guess. I just was in Paris, and I got disillusioned because everybody was smoking five packs of cigarettes a day. They don't clean the streets very good over there. There's garbage everywhere.
Oh, and they let their dogs poop on the sidewalk.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, they don't care. It makes it less friction when you walk in it, you know. I guess that's
right.
The two.
Yeah, yeah. They even have like a, you know, a pseudo, you know, good luck myth. If you step in the dog poop with your left foot, that's good luck. What? Because it wasn't my right foot. I don't know.
Yeah, that's funny.
So let's. So I would love people to go and go to rethinkingcities.org and join me and tell me what they do. You know, I
spell it real slow so people can understand it.
Oh, rethinkingcities.org. So that's all one word. Cities is plural.
And where do they get your book?
They can get the PDF version right there on the at rethinkingcities.org.
Oh, cool.
And if they want hard copies, I'm working on a publisher.
Oh, okay. How does that PDF stuff work with the books? I thought about doing some that way too.
Well, PayPal has a nice way to distribute them.
Really?
PayPal makes a button for you to distribute PDF files.
Yeah.
Tell PayPal that you have a product you want to sell and give it a description, and they'll take it and forward it off to your email, and you forward it, then you send the PDF to people that have paid.
So, in other words, you actually do sell your book, but it's done in that format.
Exactly, and then people read it on the computer, which is, you know, a wonderful way to save
paper. If they can't read it all in one day, do they come back and read it another?
No, they'll get a copy that they can download to their computer. Read
it. Oh, okay, so it's in a little CD kind of ROM thing.
Oh, it's a PDF file, so they need Adobe Reader to read it. But I've formatted it into two columns, so it's easier to read and that kind of thing. Instead of, you know, reading pages is difficult because the paragraphs are so wide.
How many pages would your book normally be if it was a normal book?
Oh, well, it's only the 88 pages of the arguments of why we should build city ships.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically a 10,000 words about trying to get people on the right track. You know, you find that when people have the same facts, they tend to agree. And I spent a lot of years, like, talking to people about this kind of thing and chasing down architects and, you know, environmental toxicologists and, you know, doctors and all that kind of stuff. But
gentlemen, you have 30 seconds.
Oh, okay. So, but the idea is, you know, I want to have, give people the arguments why we should do this, because it's the moonshot for the environmental movement. It puts in the right variables to make us make the right choices.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you came on the show tonight. It's a different, different slant to my normal show, but I wanted to, I have a great passion for, you know, the arrangement of cities, and I think if we could just stimulate a few people out there that are maybe entrepreneurs that move in the direction of architecture and think a little bit about development in suburbia, and we get a few people to just think a little bit differently and think about the environment and what a great thing it would be for even little animals and people and no cars running around these buildings and
exactly.
control. I think we just more seeds that we plant makes the life, you know, much more interesting and enriched and a better world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and your expertise in instrumentation will, you know, definitely come in handy.
Well, you came from a family that made Los Angeles.
Read The Muslims of Our Generation, Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light by Dr. Fred Bell. Bring energy and healing technologies into your life that have been kept secret for centuries. Exposed or highly classified research projects in use today at NASA and Area 51. The book is available on Dr. Bell's website, www.pyradyne.com. You'll also see more information about Dr. Bell's nuclear receptors, which allow our bodies to process all forms of electromagnetic and chemical toxins, assuring longer, healthier life. Call 1-800-729-2603 today.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.